Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damian Abraham. Once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, you may know her from the TV show Irma Vep. You may know her from the runway fashion capitals of the world. But today we will be talking to her about her fantastic Oxford Gardens EP. Devin Ross is on the program today, and this is a very interesting conversation. More on that in 1 second. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnedoutofpunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother, who is the show producer and the guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the message to me. Thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do. You can also find this podcast on Twitter. No, not Twitter. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. All those are found at Turned Out of Punk on those respective platforms. And you can find me on Twitter or on Instagram at Left4Damian. If you want to support the show, tell all your friends about this podcast. Let them all know that you enjoy this thing. And they may enjoy it too. I also play in a band. We are called Fucked Up. You can find out more information about that over at fuckedup.cc. And there's records and no tours right now on the horizon, but there's records and t-shirts and charity auctions and all sorts of fun stuff over there to find out about. Actually, I don't know how much it gets updated, but there's definitely stuff on there and links to stuff that's more updated. Like the band's on Instagram and Twitter. Mike does all that stuff, so you can find that stuff over there and check that out. And that is about it. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, today on the show, someone who has had a very, I guess, their beginning of a journey into this world of music, but someone who has been around this music their whole life. Talk about someone who was raised with guitars very present in her life. Devin Ross is on the podcast today. I was first familiar with Devin Ross from that revamp of Irma Vep, a fantastic movie, and I actually really enjoy this TV show too that came out a few years ago. I had no idea that it was even the same person at first, when Thurston Moore and Ecstatic Peace, his record label that he's run for years and years, kind of started raving about Devin Ross and this new EP they were putting out. And the first songs that I heard, I thought were fantastic. And Oxford Gardens, as it's called, is a great EP that has now come out on a static piece. And then putting all these pieces together and finding out about, not that it's about people's parents, but I do find this podcast, as much as it's about punk, it's also people's journey into music. And I'm fascinated by different ways into things or different exposures to this culture, to this music, or anyone that chooses to be involved in this thing. So yeah, Devin's journey was very interesting to me, and it's a great conversation. It's something you'll hear in a second. So why am I telling you about it now? So I'm not going to ramble on anymore. Check out Oxford Gardens. You're going to be hearing a lot about Devin, I imagine, going forward. Like, she is an incredible player, great songwriter. Also just someone that I think you're going to be hearing a lot of in the future. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Devin Ross on Turned Out of Punk. Devin, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as I told you off air just now, I'm a big fan of a few different projects that you're involved in and a few different mediums that you're involved in. So very excited to get a chance to talk to you today.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited too.
Well, I got to start off the way they all start off, which is, Devin, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across it?
God, I don't know. I was like obsessed with the Ramones when I was a little kid. That was probably like the first music that really like I was really like excited about. And yeah, I would like record little like songs that I thought sounded like the Ramones. I didn't think they were speaking English when I was a kid. I was like, and I would just like make up, I thought they just like made up their own language or something, and I would try to like kind of like emulate them and like just speak like gibberish. But yeah, the Ramones is probably the first, my like introduction, I guess. And like my parents were always playing music in the house, and then I mean, I in LA, and kind of like when I was a teenager, there was like a pretty happening like DIY kind of punk scene, and all my friends were kind of in like these hardcore bands. But yeah, it's kind of like always been around in my life, so.
Well, you grew up in, or you were born in Toronto, like myself, right?
Yes, I was. Were you? Wow.
I'm Toronto right now.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's crazy.
We're fellow Six Gods.
Oh my God. I know. I
Yes.
am kind of. Yeah, I was born there, and then I kind of spent like my teen, early teen years in LA.
So, how long did you live in Toronto for?
I was living there on and off like my whole childhood, so probably until, I mean, we were always moving around, but I left when I was 14.
And you grew up in a musical household because your dad played in a few different bands, including legendary LA punk band Legal Weapon.
Did he? No. Maybe that's something I don't know, actually.
I think he played guitar on Legal Weapon's record from 1988.
Oh, probably. You're probably right. I didn't know that. I'm like learning stuff.
It's fascinating because I knew Broken Home, but I did not know like about like his he had an early metal band called No Sugar too, right?
Don't know. Maybe that's a different kind of rock. I know the Broken Homes for sure.
I think it's the same guy because I definitely I like it would have been around the same time. And I think Legal Weapons, maybe he just played on the album, but I think they were also on MCA around the
Oh, that
same
makes
period.
sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I have to ask him about that. I did not know that.
Definitely, please do. We'll do a part two and you can fill me on the Legal Weapon connection because Legal
Yes,
Weapon,
I'll give you the inside scoop.
well, Legal Weapon, I think, is a very underrated but hugely significant LA punk band. And the vocalist, her voice is raging. And they kind of kept going. And by like 1988, they were a little more metal sounding, but a very significant LA punk band.
Wow, cool. I didn't even know that.
So, what was the first kind of show you went to?
Oh God. I mean, the first show I went to was like definitely one of my dad's shows. But I don't know, I kind of started going to shows alone when I was like a teenager. I don't know, we go to like the Smell in LA, and like there was like so many kind of DIY like venues at that time. I don't know if that's still happening. I'm sure it's still happening, but it was like kind of like more of a tight-knit like scene at that time. But yeah, like I just grew up going to my dad's shows, and then you know he'd like take me to see the Stones and stuff like that, which I remember really well. But yeah, I don't really remember the first show that wasn't my dad's show. It's kind of like it's kind of a blur. I must have been really young.
Well, that's the thing when you grow up in a household with music like that. Like my dad played, but not like your dad plays. So I kind of grew up going to concerts too, where it's just kind of always around you.
Yeah, it was just kind of like a normal thing. I didn't really like it wasn't like cemented in my head because it was so, I don't know, it was so normal for me to like go to shows, which is crazy. But yeah, I don't know if I can remember like my first show. I mean, I remember the Stones really well. That was maybe my first show. That wasn't my dad's, but
You brought up the Smell there, and I think that's obviously still going, but it's one of the most significant moments in recent DIY history because I think that's one of the last places where you had like a DIY scene that's centralized around a venue like that. Like
yeah, and like young people could go. It was like kind of one of the few places we're allowed in, because like you know most of the clubs we couldn't go to, because we were like 16, 17. So the Smell was always under 21, which was cool. I think that's probably why we all went there.
when you need those spaces, right? For kids to kind of discover music and get a chance to get up on stage and play.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, not everyone had good fake IDs. You know, at least some of us did, some of us didn't. So we kind of all had to congregate in a place that we all could hang out, you know.
It's interesting because so much of music history, particularly rock and roll history, has come from young people. And I feel like this is the era where it's kind of skewed way older. For the most part, like there's so many more young people, I guess, into different stuff now that it feels like rock and roll is becoming just old people's music, and a lot of it comes from older people, but that's not what drives this thing, and certainly not with punk.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think you could definitely look at it that way because that is very true in a sense. But I mean, I have so many friends, like all my friends are kind of in rock bands. Like, I guess it's maybe the people I surround myself with, but I don't know. I feel like it's very much alive in a certain space. Maybe not in the mainstream, but
Yeah, like I think, you're right. Like it will never die at any point. And I think it's obviously still very significant. Like it's all I
yeah, but
play.
it's not like, oh, music's gonna change the world type thing anymore.
Yeah, like it feels like that's probably going to come from Minecraft or Fortnite looking at my kids.
But I feel like even like, I don't know, like I even know like younger people who are like into that stuff, and then like later in their teens they start going to shows and their interests kind of change.
Oh,
But it's
absolutely.
definitely
Yep.
not the same as it used to be.
Well, I think a lot of it is, like you're saying, I'm sure there are DIY spaces. There are, I know for a fact, DIY spaces, but it's not getting easier to find these spaces to play as rents are going up everywhere, as things are
Totally. I
getting
mean,
more and more expensive.
I think the Smell almost closed like during COVID. I mean, LA like changed a lot during COVID, I think. Yeah, sadly, but
I think everywhere.
yeah, definitely. I think everyone says that about every city, to be honest. Kind of sad, but like I'm in Austin right now. I just got here a few days ago. It's like my first time here, but there's so many places to play music here. It's like insane.
Well, it's interesting when you look at Austin. Well, once again, that's a place that I'm sure has changed a lot too. But like when I remember going there for the first time, it's like a city that's built for live music. And I guess South by Southwest has had a huge role in that. But there, like you're saying, there's so many venues. There's so much.
Yeah, like I haven't been to a city where it's like venue, all on like the same street. Like in LA, you like go to one, you gotta drive 30 minutes to the next one. Like they're all super spread out. But here it seems really like tight. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's very much kind of on top of itself in a way with
Yeah.
Austin, and
Yeah.
there. I guess also bands get free parking there, or like you got free load-in time outside of
Yeah.
venues and stuff.
Yeah, I think so. My boyfriend like played a show the other day. Yes, I think that's true actually.
It's amazing because like cities build themselves on the artists that come from there, and like oh, this huge musician is from this place, but they make it so difficult to be a musician on the way up in any of these
I
places.
know. I know. I mean, being a musician is hard in general, but especially these days. But yeah.
Did you grow up playing music?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I was kind of like rebelling against it at some point in my life. I feel like when I was young, I mean, there was like always guitars around, so I would always like pick them up and like, I don't know, learn a song, or you know, I had the song I knew that I would play, you know. But I like seriously started getting into it when I was probably like 14, 15. I started like playing guitar like properly. But before then, I mean, I always kind of like played instruments like my whole life. I played the bass when I was younger. I was really into that. I had a little band where I played the bass when I was like probably 8 or 9. But yeah, it's always been like around for sure.
What was that band called?
I don't know. Someone asked me that the other day and I was like, fuck, I really wish I remember what it was called. I cannot remember what it was called. I don't even know if we named it, to be honest. Like, I feel like it was one of those like little kid bands where you'd like go to band practice, but like you never actually came up with a name or a song or anything.
Seems like for me, it was always just coming up with a name. It never really got past it. Come
Yeah,
up with a good
yeah, yeah.
name,
You
a
have like those
logo.
band meetings
Yeah.
and you think of a name. Yeah.
Yeah, writing the songs and all that stuff. That's when all the work comes in. I had no
Totally.
time for that.
I don't think we were writing songs. For sure. We're probably playing other people's songs, but yeah, no, we weren't that serious.
What brought you back to, was there like particular artists that brought you back to wanting to make music?
That's a good question. I mean, I think like when I moved to LA when I was like 14, and like started going to show like go to shows at the Roxy all the time, and like I see these kind of like little like surf punk rock bands, and I feel like that kind of made me want to start a band, just like going out and seeing that stuff. But I think I just picked up the guitar and I was like, I think this is just like for me, you know. I kind of like rebelled against it as a kid because everyone always asked me if I was gonna play guitar, or like, oh, are you a guitar player? And I was like, no, I want to be a ballerina, like not a guitar player, like, you know, I don't want to like follow in his footsteps, whatever. But I just like can't help it. It's just like in me. So I was just, succumb to it one day.
Well, it's interesting because I imagine your relationship to music is different than a lot of people because it's the family business in a way.
Totally. Totally. And you're like, you're a teenager, you're like, oh, what's the point? I'm never gonna be as good, or which is just that stuff doesn't matter at all. I've learned as I get older. And it's just important to do your thing and do what you're good at and what you like. And that's pretty much it. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, but there are so many pressures and there's so many outside factors trying to, maybe not even trying to, but that can affect the way you approach things. And I mean
Totally.
you, I'm talking about myself, obviously, and projecting onto you, but
Yeah, no, that's completely correct. And I think if I had, I don't know, I mean, we're so different, and I think the type of music I do is so different, and I think that probably like helps me a bit. I'm like, I'm not doing the exact same thing, so it's not like you can't even compare, and no one can even compare, which is cool because I don't want to be compared. So yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. But I mean, yeah, of course there is pressure. Like even when I was learning to play, of course you get frustrated, or oh, I'm not going to be as good ever or whatever, but it's fine. I'm not going to be as good as him. Like that's fine. I've accepted that.
well, it's hard because he wrote one of the greatest rock guitar riffs of all time.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm not going to tell, I'm not going to touch
Yes.
that. We're very different. That's okay.
But I think that's also like it must be just so gratifying as a parent. Like I've got three kids and my younger two children are starting to play music now and they're way more talented than I ever could hope to be as a musician, but they
Yeah.
are, but just, and then they're also into different stuff that I'm into, but the fact that they're into music and that my chaotic life didn't scare them off of that path is
Yeah.
really gratifying.
Yeah. No, I think he probably feels the same. I mean, my sister's not into me. I mean, of course, she's into music, but she doesn't play music or anything. So I think when I started playing music, he's probably like, yes, like somebody's gonna do it.
Someone's going to take all these guitars.
Exactly. No, exactly. No, I'm always trying to steal shit. I'm notorious for thieving his gear.
Not that you have to choose, but you consider yourself an actor or a musician first, or are they kind of on equal footing for you?
I mean, that's yeah. That I feel like they're all so different. Like, music's just like really personal, and that's like something I could do on my own, like at my own pace, and experiment things and try things. And acting's more, I mean, they're just like different mediums, I guess, like different ways to express yourself. Like I'm expressing myself in a completely different way when I'm acting, or like I'm working in a different way. The way I think about what I'm doing is completely different, because you're working with other people, you're like working with this director or writer to make their vision come true. And music is purely my vision. So it's like a completely different headspace, I would say. But they're
And
both equally as important to me. I mean, music is just, I don't know, it's like the purest one, I think.
it seems like it's one of the few that you can do just completely independently. Like it would be very hard to put on a play or certainly make a movie as one
Totally.
person.
Totally. I mean, of course you have freedom when you're acting in a film, but you're also telling someone else's story, or you have to do what the director wants at the end of the day, which is cool because I like working with cool directors. And of course you can have your own input and have your own ideas. But yeah, music is just like me sitting in a room by myself and doing whatever I want, and no one's telling me what to do.
Do you ever find them as like escape hatches from one another? Like when one becomes too much of a, not a headache, but when one doesn't serve the creative need, there's always the other one.
I mean, yeah, it's just cool because like I'm so into both of them. Like I love movies, but I've obviously like grew up with music. Like music is like deeper in me, I would say. But it's like great to do like a really fucking stressful film, and you're just come out of it like, whoa. And then I can just like sit in my room and play guitar for the next 2 months, kind of like unwind.
I was reading some interviews with you today, and it feels like the pressure on your music career is very different than a lot of new artists coming out. Certainly, the familial aspect of it, but then also just the fact that people really seem to be pushing a narrative of a It Girl was one Evening Standard article type thing, and there's like this sort of pressure to force it to be one thing, but it just seems like everything you're doing musically is almost like you just resisting that and going your own way with
Totally.
it.
Totally. I mean, I think at this point, like, everything I do is gonna be model slash actor slash it girl slash,
I have the same problem.
which is just, yeah, right? I'm sure. I'm
Right.
sure you do. It.
That's why we relate so well to each other right now.
Totally. No, it's really just something I've accepted. I think at first I was like, it girl, like, what's an it girl? Like, I'm not a fucking it girl. Like, what does that mean? And then at this point, I'm just like, whatever. Like, people love to slap a label on whatever you're doing, and that's fine. Like, I know myself, so call me whatever you want.
But it's interesting because I think stylistically, even the music you're making is resisting that. Like it feels very, well, like you were saying earlier, like very personal and very what you want to do versus I'm sure like other factors in this industry that want to get in there and sh steer it a certain way.
Totally. But that's why it's so great. And that's why I like working with Thurston's label is so awesome, because they're literally so like, do your thing. Like, they haven't told me anything. It's just so, they just let me be like so independent, which is rad. And I can like, make any music I want, really.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you remember meeting? Have you met Thurston? I'm sure you have, right?
We're good friends. I met them. He did the music for Irma Vep, actually, and we met at the premiere at Cannes Film Festival. And yeah, it was just like history since then. And we were both living in London at the time, so we'd like hang out, and his wife's really sweet. And we just kind of like built a cute little friendship.
He has like growing up, he was my it boy. As a
Yeah, oh my God,
young,
he's like my, like, I played a show with him, my first show actually, at the 100 Club a few weeks ago. And yeah, he was like sound checking, and me and my friends were just like staring at him like, oh my God, like, this is so cool.
yeah, I think most of my personality is directly related to stuff he was into, or like the way he acted in that movie 1991, The Year Punk Broke. I don't know if you ever watched that
I've
documentary.
never watched that, but I gotta
Oh,
watch that.
you gotta watch. It's amazing. It's the Nirvana Sonic Youth Tour in the summer of
Oh, sick.
'91.
I think I've seen clips from that actually.
It's awesome. It's so good, but I would just take it all in and yeah, there's just something about him and his approach to music that's just so pure and loving about music.
Yeah, totally. I think he really changed the way I saw playing guitar and writing music, you know what I mean? Which like really inspired, because when I started getting into Sonic Youth, I was like pretty late to the party, but I was just like, whoa, you can make music that sounds like this, or you can play guitar like that, or you can do like any, obviously I knew about tunings from like Keith Richards and like, that kind of the open like blues tunings, but I was just like, what, it really like blew my mind. And I think that made me feel like I could like really be an artist, I guess, because I was always like I've always been into music, I've always been into writing songs, but I never wanted to have like, a rock band like that sounded like the 60s or like, and then when I started getting into like Sonic Youth and Pavement and like Breeders and all that stuff, I was just like, whoa, like, I want to make music that sounds like that, or like it just like kind of, I don't know, it kind of like opened my mind of like songwriting, I guess.
Yeah, 'cause I think what you're saying there, like he has like a it's almost like the equalness of all forms of artistic expression, where one second it's Madonna worship, the next second it's free jazz worship, the next second it's like worship of some scrappy teenage punk band from Sweden, and they're all equal.
And there's no rules, like there's no, you know, the structure rule doesn't apply, and like
Everything's valid.
Totally. And it just kind of makes you feel like you can do it too, I guess. I don't know. You know, when you listen to Jimi Hendrix, you're like, I'm never going to be able to do that. But like, there's something about Sonic Youth that's like kind of for the people. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so too, because I think they were, they make feedback sound interesting. They made noise popular.
Yeah, they and also like the approach they have to kind of noise-esque music, like I don't know, I love like songs that are noise with the chorus, with like a catchy chorus, or like, you know what I mean, I always wanted to do like kind of like a half and half vibe, because I love like pop songs, like I love catchy songs, like, you know, what's not to like, but I also love like experimental, like kind of noisy droney stuff, so I always wanted to kind of like mix those two things together.
Well, I think that's when punk and hardcore are done perfectly, that's what it is. It's like a really catchy pop song disguised as something super aggro and completely impenetrable.
I love that stuff.
There's a I say it all the time on the show, but when Jennifer from Royal Trucks was on the podcast, she talked about how she would hear like pop songs and Discharge's music, and there's like there's something wonderful about hiding a pearl inside like an oyster or something, like something beautiful inside something not necessarily powerful or attractive.
Totally. Even like I've been really into that song Star Power by Sonic Youth.
Yeah.
Where it's just like it's so catchy and awesome, and then it's just like, and at the end it's so catchy and awesome again. Like just like the hybrid of those two, like that's like perfect like song to me.
Yeah, there's a quality to aggression, and there's just something that is, when it's something's honest, when there's an honest form of expression, and there's something that's catchy to it, that's like, I guess that's what we're all chasing, right? We're all trying to make that kind of art.
But then I also love like, I don't know, like the Glenn Branca, like just fully fucking freak out, you know.
Noise attack,
catchy things or anything, but it's still really cool.
I find I need a little pop structure, otherwise I just get lost in the noise.
I mean, Glenn Branca has these like I think my favorite one's called like Lesson Number One for guitar. They're kind of like guitar like orchestra, like noisy guitar orchestra. It's just so cool. I don't know, it's just like ever-changing kind of songs.
Well, that's, I think the Sonic Youth thing is fascinating, because they are an art rock band. Like they come out of Glenn Branca, they come out of this guitar symphony world and this, but they're also very much trying to be a pop group and going for these opportunities that are presented to them. But there's also this sort of weird punk thing running through it too. They're just like
because they came out of that like time in New York, like the no wave kind of scene, which is so cool. But yeah.
So did you find yourself able to kind of fit into any sort of scene, or is that even relevant at this point?
I don't even know if that even exists anymore. I was talking about that with someone the other day, and I was like, it's just so broad now. Like, I don't know. There's so many bands, which is great, but like, I wouldn't say there's like a particular like movement happening at the moment. Or maybe there is somewhere, but.
And it feels like it doesn't have to be centralized like it used to now. Like there's post pandemic where everyone's kind of used to taking in music wherever they can find it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be all from one place so much as it all has to, I don't know, ring true to a person now.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has something to do. I mean, I hate to say it, but like social media and stuff, they didn't have that back then. They had like what they had around them, so it's so much easier to create a scene, I guess. And now there's just so many in the fucking internet, so it's like, you know, they're out there, but they're not physical, I guess.
When there was also, it feels like when you had limited resources and it's a group of people in a scene that are all kind of trying to do this thing, there's a gatekeeper kind of quality that winds up happening where only certain things are able to ever get released. But now anyone can put out their music and have it
Totally.
disseminated around the world.
Totally. I think I was talking about this with someone the other day, like the last kind of like scene, because I had just watched that movie Meet Me in the Bathroom about like the Strokes and that whole like thing. That was probably like the last actual physical like scene of like music of all these people that like live near each other and played, you know, like kind of rock explosion revival situation.
I think the smell that you brought up, I think that's another, like,
That too, yeah, that was like a little time in itself. And
yeah.
even like that, the little like punk thing that was happening back then, that was like, I mean, I was also a teenager, so everything felt kind of like really cool and special and, you know, exciting. And oh, that all these people know each other and all these bands are playing together. And, you know, yeah, that was kind of one in itself. Yeah.
I think the Meet Me in the Bathroom, it's like a fascinating moment because post 9/11, post Vice relocating to Brooklyn and being there, it felt like I get what you're saying. Like, that was the last time that the media became obsessed with a place and romanticized the geography of a city and the music that was coming out of it in that sort of way. Like, with The Smell, it was very much about that venue more than it was about Los Angeles. But yeah, Meet Me in the
And it was a
Bathroom
bit
scene.
more like underground. I feel like all those, like the Strokes, yeah, like whatever, they all became mainstream. You know what I mean? Like they all had like number one records back then. And that was like, yeah, the last like big, you know, because obviously we'd see bands at this, like Little Dead, they were our age, like, you know, they were teenagers, which is great. I'm not like undermining teenage bands or some of the best bands ever, but, you know, like successful group of, you know, bands that were mainstream that everyone was listening to and like talking about.
Yeah, because you're right. That Meet Me in the Bathroom scene has like a slickness to it. Like,
Yeah.
it's packaged and ready
Totally.
for mainstream consumption.
Yeah.
But there's, I guess that's also why it never rang as authentic to me as something like The Smell scene did, because there was that sense that, like, these are people ready for this. In a way that The
Yeah.
Smell felt like it was kids just kind of fighting for space.
Totally. Totally. And bands that would like fall apart after one show or whatever, which is beautiful, you know? Like
Yep.
it happens. Yeah,
Some of the greatest bands never make it past that one show.
exactly.
Well, as we discussed, some of the greatest bands don't even make it past that naming stage or even make
I
it to the naming stage.
know. It's so true. I mean, yeah, it's life.
Is the record coming out as a as like a physical record, or is it only going to be digital?
Yeah, it's gonna be on vinyl too.
So that must feel like incredibly gratifying to put out, or does that have the same sort of significance to you?
It's really cool. I just think it's so cool to have like a physical thing. Like, I don't know. I love buying people records and like cassettes and stuff. Like, I think it's so important to have a physical thing and like give it to people and like, you know, if they don't listen to it, like it's in their house. You know what I mean? Like if something gets lost in your phone, then that's like one thing. But if you have this physical thing, it's like, you know, someone's gonna look at it, even if they're not gonna listen to it. Like, I just think it's important to have like an actual like thing you can like touch and look at and play.
Well, yeah, because I'm realizing more and more that, like, there's sort of this idea that once it's digital, it's permanent. But like you're saying, it gets lost. Like, there's so much stuff that you just.
Totally. Spotify's a crazy place. Like, Spotify's a big universe, and you know. A record store is also a big universe, but it's, you know, you can see everything in there.
Yeah, and I think once you own it too, it becomes part of your life in a way that music that you're just kind of dipping in, dipping out of doesn't. Like, you have to carry this shit around. Like,
Totally.
every time I move, it's like fucking 5 days of lugging this shit
Oh
places.
no, I totally get that. I just moved all my stuff from London and I was like, I had so many records and they're heavy as fuck. Like it's yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to move around. But I've always been like super into buying records ever since I was a teenager. So
There's something that's yeah, there's like when you own the artifact, it hits different.
totally. And just like I don't know, playing records from top to bottom is like so important to me too. Like, you know, it's really easy on Spotify to just like put it on shuffle or like pick out a song, but like people make these things in order for a purpose. You know what I mean? Like people think so long and hard about what order their songs are going to go in. So I think it's like also so important to listen in the order that the artist, meant it to be.
It's weird though, because like I wonder if the approach changes. Like obviously you're still thinking about it in terms of like a physical vinyl release, but I like when you go through Spotify and you look at the number one song on most artists, unless they have a huge hit, it's always that first song on the record. Like it's just, and
That's
then people,
true. I mean, maybe people never make it past the first round.
that's what I think, right? Like so now is the idea that you got to start with your best song, not necessarily your best opener, but your best song overall.
I mean, people's attention spans are so fucked these days that, like, maybe that is the way some people think about it. But I love when there's a secret hidden, like, amazing song.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
you have to listen to the whole record and then you're like, what? Or when you've never listened to the whole record and you make it to a song and you're like, I've never heard the song before. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, like the Modern Lovers, first Modern Lovers record, I don't even really like side one at all. Like the whole side one. Side two is where it gets good.
I agree, actually.
You need those B sides. And that's
Some of the B-sides are the best. And also it's like, as an artist, I feel like you think about it so much. You could even like get lost in that. And like, what is the best song to you is not the people's favorite song, which happens all the
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you kind of, and I guess that is the upside of a streaming service is that you can actually see what songs people will respond to on the record, provided they get past the first song.
Totally. Just
Like, yeah,
scary and cool.
it's terrifying and amazing at the same time.
Totally.
But I guess that's what it's always been. Like every stage of music has been adapting to the technology. Like it must have felt terrifying when recorded music first came in. All these musicians that are only good live are like, oh my God, now we got to figure out how to put this on a
On
medium.
tape. Totally. No, it is interesting how every, I don't know, few year. I mean, now I think digital is just gonna be like this forever, but vinyl, CDs, cassettes, it just is going.
Well, the art stays the same. It's just the mediums to express it change, or I guess maybe the creative drive stays the same, but the mediums to express it change. And a large part of that, I guess, is adapting to these changes.
Which you have to, I think. But I think that's important.
But then you got to wonder if there's bands that just can't adapt and are like only like, are there like a Pink Floyd or a Grateful Dead? I'm not an expert on either, but I imagine they're not so much singles bands as they are album bands. And in this generation, like, is there room for album bands?
Totally. I mean, I think there is. I just like it goes back to like the attention spans being fucked up. Like, I love listening to a record, but I also love making playlists. Like, that's like one of my favorite things to do is like make playlists. So.
Yeah, and it feels like also as people's attention spans are getting shorter by just everything we're engaged with, there's also sort of a need to kind of go back to, like you're saying, like listening to the whole album the whole way through, like a meditative almost resistance to shorter attention span.
Which like most of my friends, and I think a lot of young people are into like vinyl and cassette. I mean, like one of my friends' bands from a few years ago, like they weren't even putting music on Spotify. They were literally just selling their cassettes like on Instagram. They're like, if you want to listen to a record, like you gotta buy this, Not
Yeah.
everyone even has a cassette player. Like, I don't know that many people that do, but
I have like 1,000 cassettes and I don't even have one working cassette player right now.
neither.
It's the worst format cassettes.
I
Like there's
know. I mean, they're cute as
a reason I think
hell.
they're yeah, they look good, but they definitely don't sound great and they break and
Don't last forever.
yeah, no vinyl. Vinyl, there's a reason that came back, but cassettes maybe not so much.
Totally.
This has been awesome, Devin. And anytime you want to come back on and catch
I
up,
would love to.
and we can talk Legal Weapon.
Yes, I'll get the scoop and we can do this again. We can do this party again.
Thank you, Devin, for coming on the show. And you heard right there, Devin in the future will be back on this podcast. And we will be talking about a lot more stuff. Check out Oxford Gardens, available now on Ecstatic Peace Records. And that is it for today's episode. Coming up on the next episode of Turned Out of Punk, someone I've known for years, and I've been certainly a fan of their band for, well, ever since this band started, and fan of their previous bands as well, but never had a conversation with them on anything approaching this kind of level in terms of the depth and stuff. So but it's weird because it does feel like a very close peer in a way. And certainly someone I'm a huge fan of. On the next episode, Matt from Pissed Jeans is here. And this new Pissed Jeans record, which is dropping this week, this is, right now it's my record of the year. This thing is fantastic. I've never disliked anything this band has done, but this one's awesome. We'll talk about it next week. I'm excited for you to hear it. Well, that's the end of this episode. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives and issues of Indigenous peoples all over the world matter. We need to protect trans kids and help trans people protect themselves and their rights and stop hate and violence towards people of different faiths, different races, different nationalities, because we're not talking about politics here. We're talking about basic human rights. Ceasefires are basic human rights. People deserve to live free from hate and violence. So if there's people affecting positive change in your community that could use support, or organizations that you feel could use support, get out there and support them. You can volunteer, you can donate money, you can donate time if you have it. There's plenty of things you can do, and there's a lot that has to be done in this world. So if there's something that you're seeing, it'll make you feel better. It will. Speaking of things that get better when you're involved in them, this music scene. This is, anyone can do this shit. Like, obviously there's a barrier of entry in terms of, I guess, the cost of equipment to make music sometimes, but anyone can start a band. If you have access to this stuff, anyone can do this, and everyone can get involved in this thing in some way, shape, or form. You can start a band, start a fanzine, start a podcast. This is the easiest shit to do. If I'm making a podcast, I guarantee you could make a podcast. Maybe there's too many of these things at this point, but hell, join the fucking party. Like, why not? What else do I like to... I tell this to you, and I'm also telling this to myself. So this is kind of like my mantra as well. Like, if you're like, God, this guy always fucking does this shit. But there's a reason, because I have to remind myself of this stuff. Speaking of reminding myself to do something, try meditating. I need to be doing it far more than I am. And when I do it, it makes me feel so much better. And I'm not telling you to try any specific practice or any specific type of discipline, because I think they're all, I don't know a shit ton about it, but in my experience, do whatever you can. There's like YouTube videos. You can follow this shit on YouTube and just try it and stick with it. If it's hard at first, you know. Speaking of something that's not hard, sign your organ donor card, because by the time they come looking for those organs, you don't need them anymore. And I've seen it perform miracles with my own eyes. So, you know, sign that thing. If you're still listening to this podcast, it has been a very heavy time. And this isn't to undercut anything that's happening in this world and the severity of shit that is just, we're inundated with. So be easy on yourself. Check in on your friends. Love them in a way that you know, you can deal with the fact they might push you away, but keep checking back in on those people. And that's it. Stay safe yourself. And I'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening.